a show that isn't really a show. We just do a show that's like just us talking. No, no intro music.
All right. Well, we've started then.
No acknowledgement of listeners.
Yeah, started.
No acknowledgement that we're doing a show that isn't a show.
Too late for that because we've already started.
All right, fine.
I don't even know what my level is.
It's pleasantly drunk.
Microphone testing 1, 2, 3, 1, 2.
How was your Odyssey?
So good. I feel like the audio is a bit fucked up.
Who cares?
Yeah, fair enough. It was amazing.
All right. It was start simple. Best bit. You have to choose one. One best bit.
One best bit.
Yeah, a single best bit.
A bunch of things kind of sprung to mind. So I'm not sure about the single best bit idea. One of them was on Space Mountain. There's a bit where... Have you been to any Disneylands? You maybe when you were like 8 or something?
Yeah, I went to normal Disneyland, yeah. Normal America Disneyland.
So I think Space Mountain's at all of them. I've been only to non-English language Disneys. I've been to Tokyo and Paris. And
is Paris really non-English language?
That's actually a really interesting question. And if I answer it, I'm never going to get to the point, so I'm going to answer it.
Okay.
Because I prefer that.
Good.
So I was led to believe that French people, and Parisians perhaps in particular, were really rude.
Yeah.
And it's not true. They're charming and lovely and friendly and welcoming. Now, maybe part of that was that Selena speaks French fairly well, and maybe part of it was that, you know, I gave it a shot, but mine is rubbish, and, you know, even when she didn't lead with, you know, obviously being able to actually spark up the beginning of something in French, they were always nice. The people who are actually rude are Belgians.
Oh, yeah, Belgians.
So fuck those guys.
Totes.
So the probably everyone that I think they call them cast members in Disney parlance. Probably all of the people that will encounter punters on a day-to-day basis. I bet they have, you know, pretty good language skills. I know that. So my favorite rides were. Tower of Terror, which is you know, an elevator thing. It's a fearful, but inside a building. And the guy that they had the best cast, the most charming and young, and well presented and friendly, and slender. They all seemed to speak at least three languages because they would do their spiel in French, English, and Spanish.
Spanish, interesting.
Yeah. Well, the guys that I encountered anyway. It's really interesting actually looking at the different staff that makes up the cast in the different areas. So like the terrible I can't even remember what it's called. The bit where you go and do a tour that is meant to be of like a movie set, and they have fire going off and water that appears to be flooding towards you, and then it, you know, all disappears.
Right, another Universal Studios thing. Yeah,
I don't know what they call those rides. They're terrible, though. So that cast, they were kind of fat and a bit older and, like, leaning against things and really slow. And it was like, you guys, there's a reason you're not in the Tower of Terror ride, you guys.
A whole cast of Gerard Depardieu's.
Yeah, I mean, not that old, and they weren't pissing in the aisles exactly. But they were just much less sharp, and like there were zero tubby people in the Tower of Terror, and like 80% tubby people on like the bus ride, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I was so unhappy that we waited in line for that goddamn ride. Oh, man. So on Space Mountain, I don't remember if it was this way in Japan. It may have been. But there's a bit where, like, if your head isn't exactly right, your head will be, like, pushed down into your chest and you'll feel like it's going to be pulled right off. So that was quite an experience. That was quite fun.
Yeah.
Eating Cornejo in Barcelona, which is Lapin, which is a coney, which is a rabbit. And
right.
It was served unexpectedly. We were in some taverna. I don't remember what it was called. It was amazing, though. So you arrive in this place, which is like down a back street off, you know, a relatively disused metro stop. Not that any metro stops are actually disused, but relatively speaking, you know. So we walk down these back streets and I start to feel like we're definitely going to get stabbed. And then we stumble across this place that we were, you know, we'd been recommended to go. We never would have found it, you know, using our natural methods, because it was like number 3,000 out of 4,500 on TripAdvisor. So it's like it would never have come up on the radar. But so we go into this place and the guy, the owner, who is, you know, a nice guy, says hello and I guess Catalan to begin with, and then in English as soon as we very obviously don't understand what he's saying. And the first thing he does is guide us to four large wooden barrels with taps on them and trays of glasses. And he's like, "Oh, try these." full of different kinds of wine. And it's just like, just drink whatever. Have some of these. And then, you know, we'll find a table when you're ready. and the rabbit, I guess it was half a rabbit. But they'd just, I don't know if they had like a bandsaw or what, but the half included half of its skull, including its teeth and eye socket. And so, of course, naturally I had to chew on that for comedy value. And that was pretty cool. They've got a dish called pimiento de padron, which is a green pepper thing, which is just sort of grilled chili peppers. And they're fantastic. So eating those was a high point.
All right, now I'm bored of high points.
All right.
I want to know worst.
Oh, Belgium.
All right, the road people.
Yep. Ghent and Bruges and Brussels, low points. All looked very pretty.
You're saying Belgium has three cities?
Well, every city with a cathedral in it, every agglomeration with a cathedral in it is called a city.
I see.
Right, so...
That's Europe, so cathedrals are everywhere.
Exactly, so everything's a city.
Well then.
Now, of course, it was not universally true that every Belgian is a grumpy bastard, but it's just, you know, I encountered too many of them.
No, don't ruin it. Let's go with that.
Yeah. I did, of course, also meet some perfectly nice people, but it'd probably turn out that they were French or Dutch.
Yeah, exactly. Don't let it ruin.
How can these Belgian people be grumpy when they make some of the best beer in the world and they are basically just surrounded by chocolate and waffles all the time, all day?
Maybe when those things aren't special anymore, you just have no appreciation.
All the magic has gone out of their lives.
Yeah.
That must be miserable. My first pint in a... this is the first time I've been to Europe, bro. Which is very strange, yeah, I think, for a New Zealander.
Is it?
I think it is. I think it is a bit strange. Like when I was when I was meant to be doing that kind of... I never did the OE thing. Which I don't know. I actually don't know what proportion of people do the OE thing. It feels like a lot.
I'm sort of looking forward to getting to that eventually.
Yeah. I think it would be brilliant to travel with children. But I guess expensive, all the extra seats and planes and stuff.
Well, it's funny because next year we're going to the Gold Coast for like a week or a little less than a week with three kids.
Yeah.
And we're also planning to go to LA and New York for 2 weeks. Without the kids.
Yeah, awesome.
And to be honest, the budgets between the two of them aren't that much different.
Right.
I mean, yeah. You know, reasonably different because we have to stay in New York, which is a lot more expensive than staying anywhere else. But still, like, you know, the money we spend on getting all five of us to the Gold Coast and renting a car and staying in cheap accommodation,
yeah,
is not incomparable to the money we'll spend getting two of us to LA and then to New York,
yeah,
and accommodating us and all that shit.
Mm.
So traveling with children is expensive, is where I'm going with that.
Right. But their sense also annoying. Of wonder and delight.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm really looking forward to being, to probably, maybe...
Covered up to the elbows in poo on a flight. Not your own poo.
No, not interested in that. Not really interested in taking any long flights with children who still need that kind of assistance.
Yeah.
But looking forward to maybe going to Disneyland in, I don't know, say 3 or 4 years when all of them are old enough to kind of appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be really cool with a kid. I mean, some people are huge super fans of the whole Disney experience. And, I mean, I like it just fine, but I think that those super fans are delusional. Like, it's not that special. It's just a theme park.
That's true of super fans of anything, though.
Yeah. Like, Cory Doctorow goes on about how amazing the Imagineers are. And it's like, fucking really? What is it that's amazing?
It depends on how you look at it.
Yeah.
What they managed to achieve is pretty amazing, and when you start to learn about the, you know, the layers of technology and whatever else go into making what they make,
yeah,
that's pretty amazing. Yeah. Like I tend to step back and look at the things in a you know, a practical, technical, and logistic point of view, and that amazes me. But other people are just quite happy to go with, wow, look at the pretty castle.
Yeah.
And either way, it works.
Mm.
It's interesting because, you know, it's a year out. It's like 376 days until we're planning to leave for the States.
Yeah.
Just the two of us.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when you have children, you have to travel without children.
You have to plan like a motherfucker. Yeah. So you're going to come back having accidentally conceived a fourth, aren't you?
By that time, that will not be possible.
2 weeks without any sort of interruption. So you're going to have the snip between...
You know, it doesn't take 2 weeks, right?
No, I mean, I suppose it only takes minutes. I need
a lack of interruption for about 7 minutes.
7 minutes?
but we're thinking, you know, in LA, we're like, what do we do in LA? We have to go to some theme park kind of thing. Yep. And we Six both flags. Agree that we don't want to go to Disneyland because it seems kind of like you're cheating your kids to go to Disneyland without them.
Yeah.
Once you have kids.
Six Flags.
Yeah, so we're doing Six Flags, and maybe we found out that we'd be there during the Halloween, the like Universal Studios Halloween Horror Nights thing. Yeah.
Is that something you have to book?
So, yeah, you buy tickets, but it's not crazy. You buy specific tickets for that, but it's not like crazy difficult to get tickets. It's just that it's more crowded on some nights than others.
Right.
But they go all out with these massive Halloween horror experiences and stuff.
Cool. Halloween's a funny sort of a thing, isn't it?
In the States, it is. Yeah, they have Walking Dead experiences and things, and it's in the Universal backlot. You know, so you're walking through the streets of New York, essentially being chased by zombies.
I see. That's basically my fantasy. Not in New York, though. I'd rather be in a city that I was very familiar with, and I would really, really strongly prefer to have like a satchel full of 22 ammo and a 10/22. That would be ideal. And maybe some kind of specialist fireman's crowbar or something. That would be brilliant. That's pretty much how I want to end my life.
Every day that goes by is a day closer to zombie apocalypse.
How many people are there that just, they dream of that excitement? See, I am certain that my body was built for war. Not like modern drone warfare, but like
terrified
fighting against
fuels,
the Romans with
chaos war
with you know, broadswords and short bows and a rock if necessary, you know, sneaking up on them when possible. I'm absolutely certain that that's what I'm meant to do, and of course, you know, in a time of ideally in a time of not such a time of plenty as now. So my body would be lean, you know, in theory.
Yeah, totally.
I'm sure that I was meant to be dead already as well. Like fight and kill and then die by the age of about 22 with like six kids, maybe three of whom had survived, maybe two had survived, and like a wife who lives in a mud shack up in some mountains where my homeland is.
I dare say you may have missed some of these opportunities.
I know. And once you miss the bus, you can't go back, eh?
Dying by 22, I think that's probably... So it's probably out of the question for you.
It's not even a rock star age. It's just I figure that, you know, you start fighting when you're about 16 or 17. You're a grizzled old veteran by the time you're 19 or 20. And then there's just no way that you survive much longer than that. Not against the Romans. Man, no. Superior power, tell you what. Maybe I was meant to be a Khan or something. In that case, everyone is dying. And maybe I wouldn't die at 22. Maybe I'd last a little bit longer. You know, but it helps to be on horseback and have superior tactics.
So how were all your flights then?
My flights were...
Just changing the subject.
I kind of think of it, I mean, obviously it is a direction travel, like, right. But I think of it as kind of up and down, not sort of, not traversing a sphere, but kind of climbing up and down the time zones.
Sure.
And going down is fine. You know, going west is sweet. It's really easy to adjust. And on the way up, we decided to take, we flew with Etihad, who we'd never flown with before. I guess they're a... And Emirates, competitor.
So
they're based in
Arabian kind of.
Exactly. So they're based in Abu Dhabi, and we were like, "Yeah, we'll have a st- we haven't would never planned on having a stop over there. You know, we'd rather have gone through, you know, Hong Kong or, you know, lots of other places. We would rather have gone through, but why not stop over there? So we extended the stopover a few days, and we just had fun there and went out in the desert and. You know, it's a weird place, man. I tell you what, I had a camel milk cappuccino,
ooh,
which just kind of tasted like a cappuccino, a not really very good one because it wasn't made in New Zealand. But coming back was terrible. Coming back was awful and painful. Door to door, it was like 34 hours or something of constant travel and waiting for flights, and it was just pain.
I kind of do you like flying?
No.
I kind of do in a strange way. I kind of enjoy the whole. It feels sort of. I don't know.
Of takeoff. If there's a decent rotation on the takeoff, I love that moment.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Because I feel like there's a really good chance that I'm about to die, but so far I've always been disappointed.
Okay. That's a nice way to put it.
Or maybe that, like, I am about to be one of the only, three or four survivors of an absolute catastrophe, and won't that be spectacular?
Well, it would. That would be very spectacular. I do sometimes wonder, I do sometimes think on a flight. Yeah, I'd quite like this to be slightly eventful. I'd like something interesting to happen on this flight.
Yeah.
I'd rather not. I don't want it to crash. I just want some sort of...
Someone to go a little bit crazy.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Not like box cutters stab some people to death and then crash the plane crazy, but just like...
No, but like crazy ranting restrained by flight crew and passengers.
I'll help.
Yeah, of course you would.
I'll help. Everyone would help now, I think. Everyone would help. You have to.
Yeah, well, it's so funny. I fell down a rabbit hole of 9/11 conspiracy bullshit recently.
Yeah.
And... It's just...
What's the tower that they use as the example? Tower 6 or whatever.
What's that?
What's the tower? The tower that...
WTC 7. World Trade Center.
Tower 7! Tower 7! Roswell! Roswell!
Building 7. Free fall. Something. Oh, pull it. Anyway. But there are people who are like...
You pull it.
There's all these people who have this issue with they couldn't have taken over the plane with just knives. It's like,
yes, they could. They could have taken it over without those.
Yeah, no one had any even vague preconceptions about what might happen.
Yeah.
Hijackings tended to end relatively non-violently in most cases previous to this.
Yeah, they make their demands. You land somewhere inconvenient. You wait on the tarmac for a couple of days. And then...
Yeah, and then a bunch of Special Forces soldiers burst in and kill them all.
Yeah.
Done.
And, you know, one or two of the people in the plane. But your odds are way better if you just keep your head down than if you do something. But that has changed. And that's why they haven't done it again. Because it would be... Well, I mean, they have actually kind of tried to do stuff with planes. It's just it's always failed.
I don't know. There is always a theory that has it failed? Or has it done exactly what it was meant to do?
I'm not quite following. Do you mean that the whole thing with taking off your shoes and stuff is what was meant to happen?
Well, yeah.
Because that might be right.
Or,
I mean,
that crazy level of paranoia that exists now. There was I don't know what the veracity of it is, but there was a document found that apparently outlined Al-Qaeda's long-term plan, which was to essentially bankrupt the US by 2020 by forcing them into military action on a number of countries, overseas countries, massive military actions around the world that they couldn't, that would basically bankrupt them.
But that is... That kind of ascribes to them kind of super villain, super genius planning skills, the likes of which we know they do not possess. Like they have no money and they're kind of stupid.
If you had a reasonable understanding of US foreign policy, though, it wouldn't be too hard to kind of get a feeling for what would happen when even if the towers didn't collapse, you fly a couple of planes into a couple of buildings and you get a fairly good idea of what the outcomes were going to be.
Four buildings.
Well, three buildings and a field.
Well, that one was meant to go somewhere else, though, right?
Yeah, it was going to be four buildings. It was meant to go to the US Capitol.
Yeah.
Frankly, the White House would have made a better target, I would have thought, but anyway.
But the thing is that all of the terrorists are idiots. I mean, the ones that actually kill themselves, they're morons. Stupid. They totally get sucked in by, ridiculous lies, and then they perform these. I mean, it's hard to say whether it's kind of brave to actually do something where you know you're going to die. I mean, I think that in some ways that's brave, but super cowardly when the attacks are all against civilians. Super cowardly.
I'm sure I've mentioned it before, but there was a TV series. There's two seasons of it, actually. The second season wasn't as good as the first, called Sleeper Cell.
Yeah.
Which was about a terrorist organization, which is about a terrorist cell in the US and being infiltrated by an FBI informant, basically, or by an FBI agent.
Yeah.
But it was really interesting because it presented almost a slightly sympathetic view of the terrorists. You could see, what the struggles that they were going through and the things that had led them to where they were. So it was, and it was, in the mid-2000s, it was 2007 or 2008. And it was I thought it was much more balanced than I'd expect to come out of the US around that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It was interesting. But, so the 9/11 bullshit, I don't even remember where I was going with that. Oh, the people, that was the hijackers. People, how could they hijack planes with knives? It's like, well, you couldn't now. Because now, first of all, there'd be like three air marshals that'd shoot you straight away.
And there's a door to the cockpit.
Yeah, and there's no shortage of people on the plane who'd rather be stabbed than crashed into the ground or a building.
I would far rather that. Chances of survival with a stabbing are really high. Now, it sounds like the first guy who died during the 9/11 attacks, can't remember what his name was, but he was a former Special Forces guy or something. Oh, yeah, he was the co-founder of, Akamai or someone.
Right.
And he was on no one can be sure, I guess. But people were talking on phones and stuff from the planes, right? So yeah. I don't know how they have this idea, but the idea was that this guy was pretty much the only one who actually fought back on that plane, and they stabbed him and he died.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's different ways to get stabbed, though. There's like the prison shiving where you get stabbed like 30 times directly in the liver. It's pretty hard to come back from that. And then there's kind of what I hope for as my first stabbing, which is like one kind of gentle, gentle slice through like a large muscle, somehow avoiding all important nerves and arteries. And that's like what I hope for my first. For my last, who knows what that's going to be. That one's going to be directly into the brain, probably. What do you hope for your first stabbing?
You know, I hadn't put much thought into it, but I'll get back to you.
Yeah.
Daniel Lewin is the person you were thinking of.
Right. Yeah, so he was, I think that he was like a tough motherfucker, right? Oh, he may have just been like a reservist or something, not a special forces guy.
No, he was an officer in the IDF special forces.
Right. An Israeli special forces guy, right?
Yeah.
Right, so those guys, I mean, didn't they like invent Krav Maga and so on? So maybe that's more against pistols than knives, and maybe they should, you know, look at their training. But it's also true that, you know, if you you can't fight two people at once. You can't fight two people at once.
No, and fighting people with knives is apparently very difficult.
Yeah. I mean, just think about when you've had, like, finger poke fights with your mates. You know, the thing where it's sort of like a tickle, but it's a little bit more grown up than that. And it's sort of going for the ribs and stuff with sudden movements and wavy hands. It's very hard to prevent those fingers from jabbing you in the ribs. And there's not much difference between a hand with fingers and a hand with a knife in it. So it's pretty hard to stop a hand with a knife in it from jabbing you pretty much wherever it wants to. It's not fun to fight someone with a knife. Take it from me.
What was I going
to
say? Oh, the 9/11 thing reminds me. I found a new podcast called The Inside Jobcast, I think it's called. It's a podcast about conspiracy theories, but, you know, by humorous skeptics of conspiracy theories.
Right.
So, you know, if you're looking for a podcast that isn't
one. It's not as good as this one, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, did you like our previous episode that I probably should have discussed with you before I did it?
No, I didn't. Don't even know what it was.
Oh.
I'm subscribed, but I don't automatically download, so I don't listen to them very often.
It's called Saint-Germain-des-Prés.
It is what now?
And it's just basically, I just stuck the Zoom on a gorilla pod on a railing at the window at our apartment in Paris, and then I went out.
Uh-huh.
It was fucking terrible traffic noise there, I tell you what. But I scrubbed a little bit of that off, and that's the whole episode.
What were you hoping for?
That was pretty much what I was hoping for. That was what I was expecting.
I'll have to check it out.
Yeah. You'll get the idea pretty quickly.
How long is it?
Oh, like 40 minutes or something. I mean, it's not like there's, you know, a narrative progression. There was the odd complaint on Twitter about it.
I must have removed my my @discourse NZ column from my Twitter when I switched from Hootsuite to TweetDeck.
Yeah, you should definitely remove that. You should also remove any knowledge of sailing. We probably shouldn't talk about topical stuff.
No, I was gonna specifically try and avoid the America's Cup because we don't know what the fuck's happened, and anyone who's listening to this probably does.
When you're listening to this, it's tomorrow, today. It's now. So we know it's 8-8, and you know it's 9-8, and you know who has the 9. And I think it's probably... No, we're not even talking about it.
We can talk in generic terms. Fuck, I hate the way...
It's one of the teams. They have 9. And the other team has 8.
I hate the way New Zealand and the New Zealand media approaches sport, especially any sport they think we should be good at.
The idea that it was a foregone conclusion that just it bothered me.
Well, it was 8-1 and everyone was like, ah, fuck them. I can't believe we let them get 1 point. Oh, yeah. Well, never mind.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and if as you listen to this, the America's Cup is not once again New Zealand's Cup.
The America's Cup is now America's Cup.
Yeah. Then what we will, you know, what we will inevitably see in the newspapers and opinion columns and on talkback radio and God only knows what else is everyone's opinion on how it went wrong and what we should do about it and whose fault it is.
How it went wrong. I'll tell you how it went wrong.
No recognition of how these people are world class at what they do.
I know exactly how it went wrong. It went wrong in several ways.
It's just blame, blame, blame. You know, it's like when the All Blacks, you know, lose games.
I know. I'm not going to blame anyone. I'll tell you how it went wrong. How it went wrong is that it's two incredibly good teams. And Oracle is...
Oh, most New Zealanders on both sides.
Well, that's true. But the two most standout performers are not New Zealanders. One's Australian and one's English. They've got the best sailor in the world. And apparently one of the best skippers. And they're prepared to fight a little bit dirtier, and they do a better job of that. And I just don't think that's in the makeup of Team New Zealand. So they didn't appear to really be prepared for it, and they didn't quite know how to respond to it.
Oh well, it'll be a hell of a thing if they do win, because they will have gone what, 8 wins, no losses,
and they already, in some senses, they already deserve the win because they've already won more races.
Yep.
So it's you know, I do and don't care. I care in as much as I like it when any New Zealander does well on the world stage. But I also care because last time we had New Zealand, the New Zealand Cup, last time we had America's Cup in New Zealand, we had lots of kind of accelerated development in Auckland. And I would love to see some more of that.
It was a neat event that went for ages, and there was, you know, a great vibe. We had this whole thing with all the different teams here, and they all, you know, there was lots of, they all became like honorary New Zealanders to an extent, except when they were racing, obviously, then they weren't.
Get lots of tourists here, get all their tourist dollars. I mean, yachting people seem like, well, many of them seem like they probably are, you know, reasonably well off. And hooray. I mean, what's not to like about that?
Did you hear about Larry Ellison's keynote speech?
That he didn't attend because he was watching that second race today.
60,000 customers.
Yeah.
I don't know if there were 60,000 waiting for his keynote speech, but 60,000 customers attending Oracle Open World or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
You know, expecting a keynote speech from Larry Ellison, and he just doesn't turn up because he's watching his yacht race.
And he doesn't give a fuck because, well, for two reasons.
He's the third richest man in the world.
Yeah, and he's an asshole. And I wouldn't turn up. And I'm not an asshole. I'm just a dickhead. I would watch my race. If I had put as much money as he... Does anyone know how much money he's put into the Oracle team?
No.
Like, our one's been like $50 million or something, right?
Well, apparently he's been... Yeah, no, it's stupid money.
Stupid money. Big investment. And apparently he fucking loves yachting. And that we've been watching some of probably the best yacht racing like in all of history. Why would you deliver it? I mean, he knows what's in his keynote. He's seen the thing. He doesn't need to be at the keynote. Maybe he could have recorded something in advance, though. I mean, maybe he could have literally phoned it in while he was watching. Maybe they could have just put up on, I mean, I'm guessing with his ego, that they have a giant, like, huge wall-sized screen. They could have just projected the race on that, and then people would have been like, ah, I understand now. Let's just watch this, and then maybe Larry will be along later, except he probably was drinking champagne that through his butt. Is that a thing?
Champagne through your butt. I bet it is for some people. I bet you people have done that.
Yep.
People put all sorts of stupid things up their butts.
Yep. Oh, hoo, hoo. Good thing too. Lucky for some. Yeah, so the return journey, no good. And then yesterday I broke my finger.
Oh, what did you do?
I fell over.
I wish I'd been there to see it. I would have laughed at you.
Yeah, and I would have deserved it. That would have been just desserts. That would have been some of my own medicine. And it would have been a good, long, hard laugh as well. God, it was an excellent, just wham, straight down, wham. And I broke my fall really well with my arm, and that was fine. But then, like, I've got this flappy thing with all these sticky off bits on the end of my arm, and they are like...
Oh, God, that's... terrible design.
I know, stupid. And like, so my arm's really strong, and then I've got these stupid little weak kind of wiggly things on the end, and so when they slapped onto the ground, they like got mashed and one of them broke. Oh,
sounds terrible.
Yeah, stupid. The bruising is starting to come up though. It looks quite handsome. It's a bit swollen. If I was a lesbian, this would be excellent. I'd be suddenly hung. I regret that. I regret that already. I regret that.
I don't even know how that just occurred to you. But anyway, that's good.
Because I'm looking at my big fat finger. That's so swollen. That's how.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
So, never having been to England, I'd never been to an English pub and I'd never had a real ale. And so my first one of them, that was a pretty, that was a memorable moment as well. I'm going to miss that.
Yep. Did you do much eating in England?
Yes.
And what's the English food situation short of, you know,
it's good.
Top restaurants? What's the
oh, no, I didn't. We didn't. This wasn't a high-end eating trip.
No. This was but short normal. Of top restaurants. Like, what's the mid-range eating like?
Good.
Oh, there you go. Didn't get, like, mince boiled in cream?
No. I mean, the reality is that the idea that England is a place that makes bad food is so comically out of date. Like, virtually every celebrity chef is from there. And those celebrity chefs are kind of celebrities because they make interesting, good food. You know what I mean? And most of them have restaurants, and some of them have 15, and they are just the big mouth faces of a large industry. 15. Oh, yeah, whatever, you know, whichever.
Because only one of those celebrity chefs has the restaurant 15.
Yeah. I don't know. There's probably Gordon Ramsay.
Did you have British fish and chips?
Did I have fish and chips anywhere? No, I don't think I had fish and chips anywhere. I had a lot of steak. Okay. I had a lot of roast beef, and I had pulled pork. That was good. That was very good.
It occurred to me after I left Vegas that I hadn't eaten a steak, a proper steak in Vegas.
Like a great big T-bone.
I hadn't just gone and eaten a steak, and I hadn't gone to a steakhouse and eaten a steak. I'd had some like, you know, kind of steaky meat from a buffet.
Yeah.
At one point, but not proper steak.
Yeah, that was a mistake.
Terrible. I can't believe it.
Yeah.
Shocking. There was too much food, not enough time.
Yeah. Did you have one of those big cheap hot dogs?
No, I didn't even have a proper hot dog anywhere in the States.
Silly.
I feel like I missed out on so much stuff.
And remember,
I shot guns, but that was about it. You know?
Yeah. Awesome. Guns are so much fun. Guns are so much fun. It's dangerous. Guns are so much fun. They should be illegal.
I liked it for 2 weeks after doing that. I had visible burn marks on my arm from shell casings.
See, they don't tell you to expect that, do they? In the movies. In the movies, they just make it look like fun.
Stinging, searing pain of cordite smoke in your eyes.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Guns are brilliant. People who dislike them, fair enough. They are also scary because they give a great deal of power to people who maybe...
I'm not afraid of guns. I'm afraid of people with guns because guns don't kill people. People with guns kill people.
Bullets. Bullets kill
mostly
people.
People with guns.
People with guns with bullets in them. It's the bullet. Yeah, people with emotional problems. There's a lot of weak people around.
Two people died, and where was it? I want to say Michigan. Maybe it wasn't. Two people died recently after a road rage incident where they both pulled their concealed handguns, licensed concealed handguns.
The only thing that can stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. Which of them thought that they were the good guy? Both.
Well, that's the thing. I was always with my argument about carrying. Now, because one of the Americans that I hung out with, in fact, the guy I went shooting with is a big gun guy, and he's got a carry concealed permit and stuff, and he carries quite often.
Yeah.
And I was like, if you're carrying a gun and someone pulls a gun on you,
you can't pull. It's too late.
Well, if you pull, then you kind of have to shoot. Because as soon as you pull, situation changes.
Yeah.
So either you kind of have to shoot them or they have to shoot you.
Well, we've seen from Mythbusters that gun versus knife, the knife will be embedded into your chest before you can pull your gun out from a surprisingly large distance. And so yes. gun versus gun, if you haven't already pulled it and the other guy's got his out, you're fucked. Forget about it.
Yeah.
Just act like a normal guy, lie on the ground, wait for him to be looking the other direction, and then shoot him in the spine. It's the only way to go.
It's the only proper thing to do.
Yeah. Have some dignity when you shoot him in the back.
So next week, should we do a proper discourse?
No. I like this format.
What's the format?
No reference material and not pretending that we're internet radio anymore.
Right.
We can take a sort of a more rustic approach.
Hey, good news.
Yes.
Well, not good news, but yay me. In the, what was it, 5 weeks since we last talked, something like that? 5 weeks? 6 weeks? Five weeks. I've lost 6 kilos.
Did you have a tumor?
No, I just am eating differently.
But still with your mouth?
Still with my mouth, mostly using my fingers to assist. My fingers and hands to assist.
6 kilos, man. That's amazing.
Yeah, a little over a kilo a week.
When you put it that way, it's less amazing.
Yeah, well, it was 2 kilos the first week, which was quite stunning and certainly encouraged me.
Now, let me guess. So the first time you weighed yourself while you knew you needed to poo, and every time since then, you only weigh yourself after you've had a poo.
No, although the worst was I did weigh myself at one point, and then I was like, oh, man, I really need a poo.
Yeah.
But that was my weight. I'd done my weigh-in.
Yeah.
It's like, man, I could have had a poo before I did that, and probably would have shaved off another, you know.
3 or 4 kilos. Grams.
So what are you doing differently?
Portion control or what? Or different
food? No. It's to do you ever see there was a...
Are you doing Atkins? Are you just eating handfuls of mints? Is that what's going on?
I kind of wish I was. No. It's a bit like that. But there's there used to be a show called Extreme Makeover Weight Loss Edition, which then became Extreme Weight Loss or something. Anyway, there's a guy, Chris Powell is his name, who does this show, and he uses a technique called carb cycling, which bodybuilders use a lot, but the way bodybuilders do it isn't very applicable for people
who want to lose weight.
But basically the way he does it is, so you, the simple gist of it is five smaller meals a day.
Yeah.
The first meal of every day is always a mix of carbohydrate, protein, you know, fat.
Yeah.
Not much, but a little bit of fat. And then you alternate each day. One day will be a low-carb day.
Mm-hmm.
So you're eating reasonably high-protein meals 5 times a day, every 3 hours-ish. So one day will be a low-carb day, so you're not having any simple or any carbohydrates, really. Minimal carbohydrates. And the next day is more of a normal day where you're still eating high-protein, but you're including carbohydrates and just making sure it's less fat.
Yeah.
And it's that simple. It's just, it's compared to other eating things I've done, it's a lot simpler.
Yeah.
Just know on any given day whether I'm trying to eat not much carbohydrate or some carbohydrate.
Yeah. So does that mean that some days you have like a slice of toast with your handful of mints and other days you just have the handful of mints?
Yeah, I'm eating a lot of wraps and pita breads and Vogels. Kind of.
All right, no, that's no good. No. Shouldn't do that.
And other days I'm eating salads with meat on them.
No.
Meat salads.
No. So basically you take the bun off and you eat what's left.
Could do that. Probably not. It's probably. Well, no, you can do that. You can eat. Yeah. I could do that. Yep. Totally. Go to Carl's Jr. and order their...
Carl's Jr. is terrible.
Their burger without buns. They've got a low-carb burger.
Yeah.
Comes wrapped in a bit of lettuce.
It's terrible. I don't know if that specific burger is terrible, but I've been to Carl's Jr., maybe not as often as you, but it's terrible.
My first visits to Carl's Jr. were much better than this than some of the subsequent ones.
Yeah, I didn't get in early.
Their meat patties are good, but at the beginning they were delicious and juicy. Kind of like Wendy's ones often are, where they're not dry.
Yeah.
But the most recent time I had it, which was, I don't know when, but the most recent time was not like that. The patty was more dry, was much less satisfying.
Do you want to hear what the mix is doing? I'm gonna turn this knob. That's what the mix is doing. That's pretty cool. It's not very nice.
No, it's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, I'll send you a link for the new mix that you should buy.
Oh yeah, is it not a UFX 12 something?
Does it exist yet?
Every now and then I give the Behringer Twitter account a bunch of shit in their ear, and they're like, "Oh no, it's totally out, bro," or whatever. And I'm like, "But where?" And they're like, "Oh, I mean, we're shipping to our warehouses. We're probably not available, but we're making them."
There's this thing that Behringer make.
Yeah.
It's called the X32. Yeah. It's a digital mixer. It's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
It's 32 inputs, and everything's routable, and it's got all sorts of stuff built into it, and it's crazy awesome. And it's like the full size one's like $3,000.
That's too much.
Totally crazy. I know, but it's totally crazy going nuts compared to similar products from other manufacturers that are like $20,000.
Those $20,000 ones, I bet they last for at least 15 years, though, and I bet this Behringer one lasts approximately 18 months.
Well, it comes with a 5-year warranty, so hopefully it lasts at least 5 years.
Approximately 5 years. 5 years.
Approximately and 3 5 days. Years, 1 month.
Yeah. My internet is not loading. Hey, wow, I think we may have done this whole thing through the VPN. Wow, it worked surprisingly well.
That's why you sound sort of American.
Dutch. This thing has stupid colours on it, this X32. I do not like the colours on it.
They're changeable. Oh, they're my all, God,
it has
all,
so many inputs. That is all, ridiculous.
Those are all LED buttons that you can change the colours on.
Oh, okay. But do they have to be primaries?
They're those little display buttons. No, I think they've got a full RGB. You can just pick any RGB colour.
All right, then. Well, that might
and
be...
And they've motorised flying faders so they can, you know, do the flying... It's pretty awesome.
That's very necessary.
I would like to own one for no reason at all.
For a podcast. Oh, we could talk a little bit about the local body elections.
Yeah, we could. I'm so close to, and I hate to say this, but I'm so close to either not voting or only voting in the mayoral part of it.
Yeah. Who would that be for?
Probably Len Brown.
Yeah.
I'm not convinced that any of the other candidates have anything better to offer.
Yeah.
It certainly wouldn't be Penny Bright, and it certainly won't be John Minto.
Penny Bright doesn't appear to be the sharpest knife.
Although I might vote for the anti-abortion guy, because, you know, he's clear that he wants to do one thing and one thing only.
As mayor of Auckland, he will end all death.
Yeah. it's stunning to me that the guy will put in there that that it will be his only priority.
Yeah.
It's like, why would anyone vote for you on that ground?
Because like, there are other things like clean streets, parks, reserves, some transport issues.
And then there's a whole bunch of other mayoral candidates that seem to be making promises about things that they couldn't possibly deliver even if they wanted to, because
we will put all our libraries on the moon.
The mayor is basically just a glorified councillor. They don't have a whole lot more power.
Even the
president of Auckland.
Even the new format version of the mayor is still just basically a councillor. Before they were exactly a councillor.
They have a responsibility for setting a vision.
Yeah. I have a responsibility for setting a vision for Auckland as well.
But no, as far as the other...
Flamethrowers. Yeah,
I don't even understand what the other people like. I don't really understand what the roles of the other people are. Like, I'm in West Auckland, so we also vote for the Waitakere Trusts, you know, the liquor licensing trust.
Yeah,
I don't even know. As far as I can tell, none of the candidates are saying that we shouldn't have licensing trusts. So, you know, that's not interesting to me. And beyond that, they seem to just basically be a charity and. I give few shits about what they give their money to be honest.
Yeah. So there's a site called localelections.generationzero.org.nz.
Yeah.
And they have polled mayoral candidates and others for their views on various urban design and transport issues.
Yeah, but it's even that's still only, you know, very minimal things. And I still have to vote for DHB members. I don't even know what the hell they do. And then my entire voting basis for this is their self-written couple of hundred word candidate statement, which could, for all I know, be complete bullshit.
I'm extremely disappointed that I haven't stood for anything. I should have. I should have a...
Next time.
Next time.
I was going to say, you could stand in the next general election, but that would probably compromise your ability to provide unbiased coverage for the Discourse election show.
It will make no difference to the quality of the Discourse election show, me being a candidate, an independent candidate for whatever the... whatever black ball is in, that's where I'd stand. Never having even visited. Well, maybe I've driven through.
Yeah, so I'm disillusioned. I don't like voting without feeling like I'm informed about what and who I'm voting for, and I can't seem to feel informed about either what the positions I'm voting for are really about.
Yeah.
Or who the hell the people are.
Yeah. This is
what my best option is to vote for the incumbents, if I can figure out who they are, because they don't even always say that they are incumbents. My best option is to vote for them, because at least, you know, if I'm moderately happy with how things have gone in the last however long, then I should pick them again, right?
Yeah. So
I don't know.
I don't even remember who I voted for mayor. I think I voted for a stage actor and like former drug addict. I think that's as far as I can remember. That's it. Yeah, I think I voted for him.
Stage actor and former drug addict.
Yeah,
narrow it down, but it could be Simon Prast.
Possibly former.
Sometimes drug addict.
Whenever I stand, I'm going to have to write my bio as if I'm a gun runner, bear baiter. Yeah, something like that. So I don't especially want to vote for Len Brown, but yeah, the other guys I'm even less interested in.
Yeah.
The better of two evils or whatever. Well, you should vote for the lesser of two evils because the other one is more evil.
Yeah.
John Minto. I find it a bit hard to take him seriously.
I find it very hard to take him seriously. Even if I agree with him on some things, I find it hard to take him seriously.
Yeah. Shouting at tennis players.
Well, I find any protest that ends up being headed by John Minto, as far as I'm concerned, even though I may agree with the protest, kind of loses credibility.
Yeah. Yeah, professional protesters. He is
essentially a renter protester.
Yeah.
Like, he'll protest anything.
Yeah. And of course, he started off protesting real things.
Yes, and he probably still is protesting real things mostly, but...
But he's shouting at tennis players.
He doesn't have to be front and center of every fucking protest.
Yeah. It's not about you, John. It's not about you. No. Yeah. So anyway, Len is obviously going to win by, I think, a reasonably large margin because Manukau is behind him and Manukau is huge.
Well, a reasonably large margin of people who even bother to vote, which is probably still not a very large margin of people. Hey, I think this happened after we did the last episode. Did you see that the Green Party and whoever the hell else it was, maybe Greens and Labour, maybe Greens and some other groups,
yeah,
Greens and Grey Power maybe,
yeah,
got their petition for a referendum on asset sales through the goalposts or whatever?
Oh, they got it through. Oh, cool. But it's non-binding, so National don't give a fuck.
It's non-binding. It was they achieved it in the beginning of August,
yeah,
which means that by the laws of referendums... The laws that govern these things, the referendum has to be taken within 12 months of the petition being accepted.
Yeah.
Which means it'll have to be a postal ballot because that'll be before the general election.
Yeah.
And so a postal ballot's going to have an even lower turnout.
And so it's going to be really expensive.
It's going to be really expensive.
Yeah.
It's going to be pointless because it's non-binding, and it's going to be doubly pointless because, of course, it's going to come back as a fucking landslide in favour of non-asset sales, because the people who are truly motivated to vote are the ones who don't want asset sales.
Yeah.
Anyone who's either happy with asset sales or doesn't really give a shit is happy with the status quo and has no particular interest in voting. So it's pointless. I kind of hate it. I kind of hate referendums, actually, in some senses, because they are sort of meaningless in that they are a self-selected poll.
Yeah.
And they are doubly meaningless in the fact that they don't actually have an effect on anything.
Do we know what the wording will be?
What's that?
Do we know what the wording will be?
No, it'll be, and it's the other thing, of course, the whoever it is, the activist involved in, you know, the activists involved in getting the referendum in front of the voters in the first place get to set the wording, so they get to frame the whole thing.
Yeah.
As we've seen.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just, referendums, the whole thing seems pointless, because all it ends up being is a meaningless and very poorly conducted opinion poll that can get bandied around by people who aren't happy with whatever it was that they weren't happy with. Yeah.
What was the previous one? 1999? Was that when we had the
really... Previous what?
We had a really the last, stupid the last one?
General election had a referendum, didn't it? Or we was had the one before that?
No, 1999 was your kids. Reducing the number of MPs from 120 to 99.
And the firefighters? Or, no, crime. Should crime be punished more severely or something ridiculous?
Oh, yeah, that was the New Zealand Justice Referendum 1999. Should there be a reform of our justice system placing greater emphasis on the needs of victims, providing restitution and compensation for them, and imposing minimum sentences and hard labour for all serious violent offences?
So,
I don't understand why. So, just about 92% of people said yes.
I voted no on that.
Fucking hard labour. Are you out of your goddamn mind? Hard labour, like breaking rocks. Not this century. I voted
no on that on the grounds that it was a ridiculous question.
It's a terrible question. And anyone who voted yes for it should be ashamed of themselves.
Yeah.
Should absolutely be ashamed of themselves.
What was the one with the smacking? I can't even remember now. Should a smack as part of good parental correction be a criminal offence? Was that what it was?
Was that 2009?
Yeah, should a smack as part of good parental correction be a criminal offence in New Zealand?
87% said no. General election.
No, it was postal vote. Was it? Yes.
Voter turnout, 56.1%.
Yeah. So, apparently the wording for the new one will be, do you support the government selling up to 49% of Meridian Energy, Mighty River Power, Genesis Power, Solid Energy in Air New Zealand?
No.
Yeah, I mean, I'd probably say no as well, but I still think it's pointless.
I say no.
If you
no.
don't support them, then don't vote for them.
I'm going to vote no, and it won't make any difference because they will have already sold off all the bits that they reckon they can, and they will do these weird bribes, like this next one. It's got this weird bribe where you only have to pay half, but you get your full, god damn it, what's it called? Dividend. You get a full dividend as if you'd paid for all of the bits you get, you've chosen to buy. It's a weird bribe. And they wouldn't do that if the previous one.
Stock sitting at the moment?
Low. Lower.
Let's have a look. $2.25, so if you bought... At the opening price, if you bought at the offer price of $2.50, you've only lost 25 cents,
yeah,
or 10%,
yeah,
of your investment
of a minimum $1,000.
Of course, you also got top up. Did you get a top up, or did you just get the option to buy more? What was it?
You get extra. Do you get extra shares if you keep it for a certain amount of time or something?
You hold them for a year, you get like 50% more or something.
I don't think it was 50%, but it was some percent more.
Hmm. Yeah.
But, of course, some people paid more for this year's. I mean, I think some people paid up to $2.70 because on opening day,
it
spiked up to there.
It did spike.
As all the people, all the Mighty River Power executives who had their pockets lined with free shares sold up quickly.
It opened. Made like it look bandit. Its first trading, its first trades once it was on the public market were at $2.62 and it's just gone down since then.
Yeah. That sounds right. But, I mean, where's it going to go? Where is the more money that it's going to make to increase its value?
It hasn't been above. I mean, you still get dividends, of course. So, you know, I don't know how that works out particularly.
And those are dividends that can't be reinvested into infrastructure.
I have no idea what dividends. I don't even really understand dividends. I don't understand what they are. I just don't understand how to figure out what they would be and what you get.
So the day before, I was like, oh, man, I really should have got some of those shares. And then the day after, I was like, man, I'm fucking glad I didn't get any of those shares.
Wow, you could have sold them straight away. You could have sold them straight away and made a small profit.
Tiny.
Yeah. You know. Or you could just invest that $1,000 in buying lotto tickets this weekend and win $30 million.
Are you planning on winning $30
million? I don't know. It's a must-win draw and it's a stupid amount of money, so I'll probably buy a ticket. But yeah. I'm not quite planning my financial future around it yet.
No. It would be very exciting, wouldn't it? $30 million.
What's that?
$30 million would be quite exciting.
I mean, I'm sure I could think of things I would do with the money if I won it. But, I mean, obviously I'd make it rain.
Yeah. Yeah. Would you have one of those stripper poles installed in your house?
Another one?
Yeah.
No, I think one's enough.
One on either side of the sex swing.
Right. For those special occasions.
Yeah. You're just greedy, Dylan.
Got to have something to keep the other ladies entertained.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
You should be enough. What with all your...
No sex swing, no stripper pole.
What with all your newly found mince-powered beefcake?
I love some mince-powered beefcake.
What is the protein that you're eating? Is it chicken without the skin?
Chicken and beef, mainly.
Beef.
I usually.
What's yours, Dad?
Fry up some chicken and some beef before.
Beef. You know, chicken and beef at the same time. That can't possibly be kosher.
No, not usually at the same time. Although, I've told you about the McGangbang burger, haven't I?
Yes.
Oh, that's chicken and beef.
Right. Beef.
So you're saying like you don't remember.
That's
you buy the McChicken and you buy the double cheeseburger and you sandwich the McChicken between the double cheeseburger. That
McChicken's not a good
and
burger.
And that's a McGangbang.
It's not a good burger. That McChicken.
It's quite good when you sandwich it between two halves of a double cheeseburger.
The first time I had one of the crispy chicken whatever burgers, man, it was great. I seem to recall that I came and scooped you up in my dirty old Mitsubishi Galant and some other people. And dragged you to the McDonald's, and we had another one, and it was like you guys were like, "This is nothing special," and I was like, "Yeah, the other one was better. The first one was really good, you guys. No, believe me." And I think it was pretty much
sounds plausible.
The same experience as after I had my first Wendy's Frosty, which I think I had on Queen Street, and then I didn't immediately scoop you guys up, but sometime later on, I was like, hey, I really feel like a Frosty. Have you guys had a Frosty? They're really amazing. It's like milkshake, only really thick, and they're delicious. And then we went and, you know, trekked into town in the same Mitsubishi Galant and went and got a Frosty. And it was like, this is like a not very good milkshake, Morgan. And I was like, oh no, the first one was really good, though. I don't understand what's happening. I'm cursed.
When the Starbucks opened in Queen Street, you know, the first Starbucks in the CBD,
yeah,
that down in the bottom of Queen Street,
yeah,
what is now Britomart Square or whatever,
yeah.
I remember going down there with Robin and some other people from work and bringing back a whole lot of Starbucks coffees or something, frappuccinos maybe for people at work.
Yeah. So David Cunliffe has taken over leadership of the New Zealand Labour Party. And that's what I wanted. And now I'm not sure. I'm afraid. Now I'm afraid that we will all find out why the ABCs existed.
The what?
The ABCs. The anyone but Cunliffe's.
Oh, I see.
It was one of the previously the most powerful group within the Labour caucus, the ABCs, and they were responsible for Shearer being the leader, even though Cunliffe was clearly the better performer.
I sort of medium don't care.
Yeah. I hope that he is. I hope that he's good. I know that he's clever, but I'm mostly stopped paying attention to
New Zealand politics because it just annoys me.
Yeah. Fair enough. It's not like it's important as we get a little bit closer to the election. It's not like they decide absolutely everything about our entire lives.
Yeah, no, not really.
You've got to pay attention.
Oh, well. I'm bored of this. What about you?
Yeah, all right.